Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. A great place to make radio. A great place to be the center of community. Yes. Thanks for joining us today. So, summer, today, on the Donald in the Kitchen.
Summertime, 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 summertime.
Thank summertime. You, Donna. Thank you. Tomatoes, corn, so many possibilities. We'll take a look ahead to the Iowa State Fair. We have some thoughts on zucchini and other summer tops.
Opinions.
And heaven, you may hear an opinion about carrot tops. I think Donna's got a little something to say. And I have a little bit of food history to share. See, there's always something to talk about. Oh, I want to also say welcome to Ames, all of those massive amounts of people that are on bicycles today.
Is that today?
Yes.
Oh!
The RAGBRAI, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa, has found its way to Ames, Iowa, and you got your streets blocked off and your beer trucks lined up. And
yeah, with an air quality alert in the yellow zone, and it's hot as goodness.
It's usually hot for RAGBRAI. But, yes, I hope they stay healthy and hale and healthy.
I'm trying to imagine if you wanted to do RAGBRAI, what would you wear? An N95 mask, the whole thing? I mean,
yeah. I don't know. There are people, there are lots, and I believe they are entering our town from the south. I think they come up from the south.
Okay, they'll be like camping all over town tonight.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's events downtown with lots of bands and things and lots of people in spandex. So welcome, RAGBRAI, to Ames, Iowa. And then
it's only one day.
And then tomorrow they get on their bikes and
I think there's
continue.
Even fireworks.
Oh, there probably is. There probably is.
I know.
Okay. Warn your dog.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. All right. Anyway. Summer. This is the season for the garden to kind of kick in, even though it's been on and off dry. We got enough rain to give it a little bit of a kick. So, and there are tomatoes coming, and there are corn
coming. Yeah, and there's a heat dome, and I don't see any rain in the forecast, so.
You know, 30%, 20%.
Yeah,
we'll see. Okay. We'll see. We tend to be a little skeptical here.
Yeah.
But that's what
if there's rain, it always goes around us, right?
See? Well, boy, are we in a good mood today.
Okay, I'm the curmudgeon today. Here we go.
So, talk about tomatoes and sweet corn.
Well, that I'm really happy about, right? Mm-hmm. It is that time of year, and sweet corn. You know, sweet corn, and I do not eat tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, any other time of year because those round globs that you see in the supermarket, they're just not worth it, as far as I'm concerned.
I refer to them as TLOs, tomato-like objects.
Ah, there we go. But now we are embarking upon the season of the real thing with both the corn on the cob, which fortunately people around here are smart enough to know not to eat any other time of year. You know, I mean, I have a picture of me at maybe a year and a half old sitting in a high chair eating corn on the cob. You know, I mean, this is truly, truly an ancient ritual here, right? As you would say. So the corn is looking really good. It's been delicious. And the tomatoes are, so when they first start, everybody wants just a plain slicer. You know, you want to really taste it. The first corn, the first tomatoes, it is a total, total delight. Everybody wants their BLTs, what's the one where you put it with the mozzarella and the, I can't even remember, the Italian salad, the cheese, the basil, the mozzarella, rah, 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 rah. You know, the classics. You just want those tomatoes plain, delicious, maybe a little salt if you like it that way.
They're good.
They're just fabulous. Then after the first few weeks, and we're not there yet. We're still in the initial tomato and corn season. After the first few weeks, when you start getting the glut of tomatoes, then you start doing all kinds of things with them, you know. Now, Lana and I, we don't like to can tomatoes. I'll speak for myself, but it seems like a lot of work for not. There are other things, and we're going to give you our alternative to canning pretty soon. So we're going to start with, I ate my first ears of corn for about a week where I do nothing but just barely steam it. No salt, no butter, no nothing, right? It's just that pure corn moment. Then you start branching out a little bit. So, Lana, I've made you some of my current favorite, which is just a light steam on the corn, a little butter, salt, and pepper, which is normal, and, da-da, black lime.
It is, I thought that, it isn't pepper. No, but it's
no, there's pepper in it.
But it's sprinkled with black stuff, and you'd think, uh-oh, Dana, what did you do? It is absolutely delicious.
Okay,
what is this?
Black lime is actually originally Persian in its origins. And what they do is they take the limes and they, I think, cure them in salt water or something for a while. And then they dry them out and grind them up. And this is, it's an old, old thing. It's kind of, if you taste the black lime straight, I mean, you taste the lime, it's like a little acidulation kind of thing.
It is. It's lime, but
it doesn't scream lime.
It looks like ground coffee.
Mm-hmm. It does, doesn't it? And why I was doing it, because, you know, in Mexico, you can buy street corn that's like either roasted or steamed or something, and they sprinkle chili, salt, and lime on it, right? So I thought, oh, let's just try a little black lime on it. And it is really good, and it's really easy. Now, where you buy black lime, and we've talked about these people before, it's an online company called Burlap and Barrel, so you have to like Google it, Burlap and Barrel, and they have sort of single origin, ethically harvested, and they, you know, fair trade, and they have really good quality spices. So that's where I bought my black lime, you know, and you keep the jar tightly sealed and out of the sun, and it lasts quite a long time.
It is delicious. Black lime, a good addition to summertime things.
Oh, and I might, once I get some really good tomatoes and over the initial just eat it plain, I might try some black lime.
Oh, I think that would be lovely.
I think it would be good, too.
Oh.
Just adds that little of acid flavor to it, you know.
Good. Flavoring of the day, black lime.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So that's my, for Lana's taster, I've cut the corn off the cob, but I just sprinkle it on with the salt and pepper and butter and kind of roll it around, and it's really, really good. So that's my little seasonal variation for corn on the cob.
Very good. I'm all inspired for summer. And yes, I've had...
How are the tomatoes looking? Lana's the queen of tomato
not
growing.
Not bad. I've had better tomato plants. My tomato plants, well, they started out with a very dry, dry summer. So they're kind of, I think they're kind of a little bit behind. And they're not really the most green and vigorous tomato plants I've ever had. But... they're not bad. And there's lots of good tomatoes coming. Of course, you always get the I grow a couple varieties of cherry tomatoes, and those come first to kind of garden graze and at least get tomatoes into your system. That's been going on for quite a few
weeks.
But
we haven't had the slicers yet.
Now they're coming. I've got first big gold brandy wines, which I've learned to really like. They're good. And
I love a yellow tomato.
I do too. And also, I'm having really good luck with the black tomatoes. This is the ones that are black crims. And
so, what are they? What would you call that? Really, a color? It's
more purple.
There's
a one also that is ripe now called Cherokee Purple. Maroon. Maroon is the color.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, so, and I wish to report that I this year have picked off and have found the largest tomato hornworm I have ever seen. I had this very small experimental plant, and it pretty much ate the whole thing before I found it, which is unusual. I mean,
did you take a picture? They are the funniest looking things in the
they're
world.
They're great, wonderful things. Usually about the size of your thumb, you know. They like tomatoes, and they like the greenery, and they will eat the tomatoes too. This one, Donna, I thought for sure I'd have to go get the wheelbarrow for that one. This one was, it was like
4 inches long.
Yeah. It was pretty impressive.
Did you feed it to the chickens?
Of course I fed it to the chickens. They enjoyed it.
Sorry, audience. Yeah, right.
They enjoyed it very much.
The joys of farming.
Their bugs aren't bad this year, but I did find that. I thought I would report that. So if you find something like that in your tomatoes.
Well, next time, if you ever get another one, take a picture with your hand in it to give perspective.
Okay. It's scientific.
I want to see it.
Oh, good. All right. Let's talk about the Iowa State Fair. That's coming up, Donna.
Oh, boy. Yes, it's weighing on us. Lana and I have agreed to do a cooking demonstration at the Iowa State Fair. We said yes because the Farmers Union asked us very nicely to do this. And, you know, who could say no to the Farmers Union? So they called and said, would we do a cooking demonstration using Iowa foods? No problem. So it is, if anybody wants to go to the fair and wants to see, it is scheduled for August 11th, and I can't remember, I'm thinking sometime in the afternoon and early evening. I can't remember when. I'm sure you can find it on the Farmers Union website, probably, what they're going to do. So, and it's in, apparently, the only reason I could say yes is because it's in a brand new auditorium that has air conditioning.
Yay.
So we'll be on there in some kind of auditorium that seats 200 people. I don't expect to fill it up, but we're going to do two different 1 hour slots. And the first one, and this is with Iowa food. So Lana and I've been working on the recipes and figuring out what we're going to serve for the first one is, early morning harvest polenta, which is it's a really easy recipe. So early morning harvest is, Earl and Jeff Hafner, who farm in Panora, and they grow their own corn, and it's all organic, and they mill it, and they grind it, and, you can buy it around the state in various places, early morning harvest. And it's a really simple recipe. You just, take the polenta, which is, you measure it in cups, and then, if you have 1 cup of polenta, you put in 3 cups of water or milk. So liquid or chicken stock. Anyway, 1 cup of the meal to 3 cups of the water. Then you add some kind of oil, whether it's not a lot, but just to keep it from sticking in the bottom of the pan, like per cup, maybe a tablespoon of olive oil, or throw in some butter or something like that. And then salt and pepper. And then I always add in garlic, and in the demonstration, we'll do what we call our garlic trick, which is, so Joe and Lana grow a lot of garlic, and, I like to cook with a lot of garlic. So instead of every time I'm cooking, having to chop some garlic up, I take a whole bunch of it, like at least a cup or two of cloves, and put it in the food processor with some olive oil, and just whirl it up into sort of a sticky mess, right?
Yeah,
so the olive oil, so it's pureed basically, and the olive oil carries all of the flavors and kind of preserves the garlic. And then I keep that in a little tub in the refrigerator, covered, of course, and use it for up to a month. Mm-hmm. So with the polenta, then you throw in a few tablespoons of that and some salt and pepper. And I like to throw in a little bit of dried marjoram for another layer of flavor. And then you cook it while it softens up, which is not that long, 20 minutes maximum. You don't want to burn it on the bottom. Now, with polenta, the traditional way was you heat the water or the liquid, and then you stir the polenta into it. Well, that's rather tedious. I just throw it all in and start it out together and mix it really, you know, you don't want the polenta to clump up. But if you're mixing it into the room temperature or cold water or milk, It works just fine. So there's no need to be fussy there standing stirring over the pot. So that's the polenta. And then at the end, and we'll do this for the food demonstration, we put in some grated cheese. That makes it really yummy, right? So you've got your polenta. Then over the polenta, we will be doing our candied tomatoes. So these
now,
are candied
tomatoes.
Candy
does
tomatoes.
That mean that we add sugar?
No, no, there's no sugar in them. This is what Lana and I do, and this is why we want to do it for the demonstration. It is what we have learned to love eating instead of canning tomatoes. Because, believe me, if you're Lana's friend, there's always at some point a glut of tomatoes.
Way too many.
Oh, it's so wonderful. It's so marvelous. And, of course, they're beautiful and all kinds of colors. And then there's this point where, what are we going to do with all these tomatoes? You know, and here I am always ready to help my friends out getting rid of all these tomatoes, right? So we have developed this way of roasting them. Now, as with any vegetable that you roast, what you're doing is reducing the liquid in the fruit or vegetable, and it makes it sweeter and denser.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Lana has a methodology for this that has proven really, really wonderful. And she wrote this recipe.
This is adapted it's from the recipe book Italian Country Table by Lynn Rosetta Casper. But I've made some tweaks to it because I have to deal with tomatoes of different sizes and different.
Right, some have more
kinds.
Water and
yeah.
some, you know, yeah. there's differences in all
yeah.
these tomatoes.
So whatever comes out of the garden, here's the recipe. 4 to 6 pounds of ripe tomatoes, enough tomatoes to fill 2 large baking sheets. Important thing here, use baking pans with edges all around because
right.
you
none
want
of
to
this,
catch the juices.
Yeah, none of this flat cookie sheet
no,
stuff.
No, this is baking pan with the edges. About 1/4 cup of olive oil and salt and pepper or other herbs, I just use salt and pepper. Set your oven to 400 degrees and oil the baking sheets. Now, here's the important, here's the technique. You core and cut the tomatoes. I seldom have to core tomatoes, but if there's icky bits in there, you take them out. Now,
right, and it's really good for using up the less than perfect
yes,
tomatoes,
yeah,
too.
Use the good parts. This is the important part. The small tomatoes you cut in half, mediums in quarters, and largers in eighth. Leave the skin on and place the tomatoes skin side down on the baking sheets. The tomatoes form little cups themselves.
And while you're sizing the tomatoes, you kind of want them to be all relative. I mean, obviously they're not all going to be the same size, but you want them relatively the same size so that they cook all at the same time.
Yeah. There you go. And then make the candied tomatoes on the baking sheets make those baking sheets pretty full. And then salt and pepper and drizzle a little more.
But one layer only.
One layer.
Don't pile
them
up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because what you want to do is have these tomatoes sort of brown. And
you're drying them out a little bit.
Then you bake. Bake these for 30 minutes at 400, and then you turn the heat down in stages. 30 minutes at 350, 30 minutes at 300, 30 minutes at 250, and 30 minutes at 200 until the edges of the tomatoes are toasty. Watch your oven because everybody's oven is a little different. Look for a little toasty. And then at the end, after the 30 minutes at 200, turn off the oven and open the door a crack and let the tomatoes sit there to mellow for at least 2 hours or up to 6 hours. Or this is relative. You can kind of, you don't have to sit there for half an hour. Just kind of go in and out. And the times, just watch what's happening. The times are flexible.
Depends on the size of your tomato pieces. I mean, I have to admit, there have been times when I have not watched it closely enough, and I burned them. So, or you get them crispier than you want, basically.
It's kind of
keep your eye on it, but you know, like you don't have to stand there and watch over it like a hawk or anything.
No. Then you scoop the roasted tomatoes and olive oil into containers with a cover and store in the refrigerator. Or here's what I do: I fill freezer bags. And these oven candied tomatoes are great to cook with all winter
love. Oh, right. Like they make an incredible pizza topping, for example. Or, you know, it's not as thick as a tomato paste. It certainly tastes better than tomato paste. And it's not as sloppy soupy as
tomato sauce.
No.
If you want
but
to.
But you can use it like on pasta. You can use it for.
Yeah. If you want to, after you take it out of the freezer along about January, if you want to thicken it up, cook it on the top of the stove for a while. But like I said, I use this in a lot of different things.
So, and you can keep them in the refrigerator for, maybe a week or something, and use them as you go along.
So that's our first.
Well, I always have to say, Lana doesn't put too many herbs in. I always sprinkle them with either. One of three, either basil, marjoram, or oregano, or some combination. So I cook that right into my, and I also sometimes use a spray olive oil. It's really easy to, you just spray the bottom of the pan, set all the tomatoes up, sprinkle on the salt and pepper and the herbs, and then spray the whole thing again and stick it in the oven. Especially if you're like, because you're using sheet pans, so you can. Most ovens will only hold two at a time. So if you're kind of like in production mode and every day you're doing two pans, you just zip, 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 zip. It's easy. Yeah. It's way easier than canning.
It's very good.
Yeah. And they're delicious that way because those tomato juices concentrate instead of like being diluted in a way when you're canning and adding water and stuff like that.
Yeah, very good. Oh, you can find this recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage, khoyfm.org. Go to Talk Programs. Go to Donna Lana Kitchen. We've got recipes there, so enjoy.
Yeah, so at the State Fair, we will be demonstrating this and serving it on the polenta, and there will be tastings for everybody in the audience so you can see what it tastes like. Then in the second cooking hour that we will have, which I think is like 2 hours later or something, they wanted a dessert. Ah. So I'm thinking, okay, what's really Iowa? And I thought, well, we got a lot of pigs here. So people don't use lard anymore the way they used to. And mostly when you think of something that you want to make with lard, it's pie dough.
Yeah. However,
I made a pound cake recipe with lard.
Very good.
So the usual thing is butter, of course. And a pound cake is pound of butter, pound of sugar, pound of eggs, right? Old recipe.
So this pound cake recipe, I have tasted it, and it's good. You would, because after all, remember, we're dealing with animal fat and flour and sugar and butter, and this lard is really good. It makes a wonderfully rich pound cake. It's wonderful.
I started by I found a book that had lard recipes, and I didn't like that recipe too much. So I went back to sort of ground zero with the pound cake thing, and I have a good reference book called The Secrets of Baking by Sherry Yard. She's a L.A. pastry chef, and what she's done in this book is kind of broken down the families of recipes that constitute the repertoire of any pastry chef. So she has a whole chapter on pound cake, and she makes these family trees of, okay, if you do this, then it's this and this and that. So she talks about under pound cake, she goes pound of butter, pound of sugar, pound of eggs, and pound of flour. And then if you cream it, you go into the pound cake family. And so she's written this thing, and I realized, okay, I was not beating it enough. Because she says the old So pound cakes are really old. It's an early, early cake recipe before there were leavenings, like no baking powder, ta-ta-ta-ta. So she says, the entire leavening process is a result of incorporating lots of air. To add such a large amount of air efficiently, I recommend using a standing electric mixer. However, a hand mixer and the old-fashioned elbow grease methods work too. Believe me, after making just one pound cake by hand, you will have a new appreciation of your ancestors. That or you'll go buy a standing mixer. No matter how you cream the batter, it is essential to stop mixing every few minutes and scrape down the sides of the bowl with a rubber spatula. This ensures even incorporation of the ingredients, which in turn produces an evenly textured crumb. So I did that. I actually got out my huge KitchenAid mixer and ran it on high and did the whole thing. Now, she does say for a lighter textured cake, you can add 2 teaspoons of baking powder, which I did. And so now we will have the master pound cake recipe.
Good.
And if you want to make a lard pound cake yourself, whatever recipe you like using for pound cake, just substitute the lard instead of the butter. It gives it a different color because it's not as yellow. I added in, because I wanted to make sure, you know, butter has its own flavoring and lard has its own flavoring. So we're used to pound cake tasting a certain way. So I added in, let's see, did I write that down? I put in, well, I used that King Arthur lemon flavoring called Fiori di Sicilia, which is flowers of Sicily, which is best I can guess is some kind of lemon oil with vanilla essence in it. So I used some of that. And then also something that I bought from King Arthur, which I keep in the refrigerator in my little herbal oils place. There's a, what's it called? Caswell Massey? Is that the London company? There's some kind of lemon paste. It's this liquid lemon extract. So I put some of that in. I also put in a pinch of pepper, which as Lana knows, I usually put, you don't want it to taste like pepper, but often in my sweets, I will put a little bit so there's like a base note underneath it. You don't, well, I won't say you don't taste it, but you're not supposed to notice it. It's just supposed to make the flavor fuller. And I did put a little bit of coriander in it just because I wanted it to have a fuller flavor. And it came out really well. So this is the recipe that we're going to use in our second cooking demo. And with it will be blueberry sauce. So we'll probably use from the berry patch. And that's really simple. You just put a little sugar, not too much because you don't need to cover the flavor of the blueberries. And, you know, cook them down to they're a little saucy. And then we're going to make rose geranium whipped cream.
Yay. So come and see us at the Iowa State Fair.
Some Iowa food. And it's not coming on a stick, okay?
Oh.
There's no deep frying involved.
Oh, good job, Donna. Good job. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Come back for more. And this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about the upcoming Iowa State Fair and food. Food is a big part of the Iowa State Fair. They are already having taste testings of the new food. And at the Iowa State Fair, it's old food done
different
ways.
It's like nothing new under the sun here.
But you wouldn't believe these combinations. People have been tasting, and the three finalists so far, there's a bunch of other people that are runners-up here. There's the grinder ball from the Bacon Box. There is the Iowa Twinkie from Whatcha Smokin'. And there's the deep-fried bacon brisket mac and cheese from What's Your Cheese.
Mac and bacon?
That
sounds very Iowa State Fair. You know, after all, we're talking butter cows and things like that. But
so we'll have more, maybe we'll leave our demonstration to try some of these. Anyway, more summer recipes, Donna. Talk about gazpacho.
Well, my favorite one that we had once already, I call it Paula's gazpacho because Paula, who is from Catalonia, introduced me to this recipe. So it's equal parts, more or less, tomato and watermelon. It doesn't taste watermelon, but the sweetness of the watermelon kind of ups the tomato a little bit. And it's all made in the blender, so it's really easy. You just put in the raw tomatoes, the raw watermelon, a piece of kind of crusty bread that actually thickens the soup up. A little bit of a tiny piece of fresh garlic, some salt and pepper, and sherry vinegar. And I think that's it. And then you just blend it all up, and she serves it with ice cubes in it.
Oh,
so it stays chilled, and she chopped in, I think, garnished it with some yellow pepper or maybe some onions or something like that. But I really like the combination of the tomato and watermelon.
Ah, very good. Now, that may be something to sprinkle your black lime on, too.
Yeah, you could do that. And of course, the thing is, it's really quick and easy to make.
What a good thing. Gazpacho, it's a time for summer, yes. Another thing that is a time for summertime things is I brought in some zucchini show and tell today just so we have something to look at. This has been a good zucchini year, and don't run away from me, folks. Please, I know there's
she picks them at a reasonable size. Okay,
nobody, you can't get them all done, and there's always something to get away, but. Some people don't like zucchini. I happen to think they're really good, and I'm having good luck. Somehow, the bugs have left my zucchini alone. The plants are gorgeous. I brought in, there's lots of different kinds of zucchini. And Donna sort of has an opinion on zucchini.
Yeah. I think zucchini is really bland.
Yeah. Huh?
It could be a flavor carrier, as they say, right? You know, and there are places where, you know, I don't mind a zucchini thrown in with the ratatouille or the, you know. And there are varieties that have slightly more flavor and some that have a nicer texture and are less watery. And the really small ones can be rather delightful. But
yes.
You know, you won't catch me making zucchini bread.
Ah, there you go. on our show, we say we have opinions, and there's one. Not everybody likes zucchini, but I do. I like the zucchini that you can pick young, stays firm. There's something also called yellow crookneck squash, which is zucchini and squash are very,
very close. To admit, I like yellow crookneck squash even less than zucchini.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, right.
Because it is a little waterier, a little more...
A little seedier, a little... other than the color, which can be nice in a stir fry, there's not much redeeming quality as far as I can tell. Now, what she's brought in, 5 different kinds of zucchini.
Okay, and these all did well, and they are good. A black zucchini, sometimes called black beauty.
Now, which one is that? That's your classic, basically.
Classic one.
Yeah.
There's a stripy one called...
Now, the stripy ones, I am more more inclined to buy a stripy zucchini if it's small enough, because usually they have, I think, a little more flavor. What do you think?
That's called a coquezelle, and I like those a lot.
So coquezelle is the variety.
Coquezelle is the variety. There's also one called, you probably won't, this one is a little softer and more delicate. This is called a gray zucchini. It's kind of
a very lighter green.
And kind of plumper.
And what do you like about that one?
I planted this one late, but it usually comes really early. So it's always nice to have one early.
Oh, okay.
It's what you call okay. Then there's a yellow zucchini that's just called a yellow zucchini. Not a yellow squash. It is not bumpy. And that's good, although my plants, of all the ones I grew, that one did not do the best this year, but it's good. And my favorite, and this is a little bit too big, but I picked one called Zephyr, which is a yellow zucchini with slightly bubbly.
It's still a zucchini.
It is a zucchini. Heaven knows. It's something to do with how the flowers are formed and how the genetics of it is. They're designed to not, yes, they will all turn into hard squash things, but they're designed to be
okay. Between the two yellow ones that you have, is there any textural or flavor difference or
no,
anything like that?
No, I don't think so. Okay. The Zephyr, which has a green bottom, it's quite nice. Anyway, I like my zucchini this year, and I'm going to enjoy them because thanks to squash bugs and squash vine borers, I don't always get zucchini, so I'm going to celebrate this year.
The smaller the better.
The smaller the better, because if you grab them early, I've made already a nice bunch of zucchini pickles.
Did you bring any, are you growing any patty pans or things like that?
No, I have grown them in the past, and I have not grown any this year.
Yeah, they're pretty, but I don't really like them either.
What? See, we do not have a fan here, but there they are.
Well, I don't dislike them. They don't have enough flavor to dislike them, you know? I just, they're like placeholders or something in a vegetable dish or something.
They are.
Except for the really small ones. I like the really small ones.
Very good. So you have to be on your toes because they grow fast. Another thing you just might have a opinion on, Donna. My husband made something called carrot top pesto. Yes, you can actually do something with the top of carrots. And actually, I have dried carrot tops in the past and used them as an herb. They ended up being much like dill, which was fine and dandy, but the flavor does not last. Neither does dill if you dry
it. Right, drying dill is kind of...
Anyway, if you Google carrot top pesto... if you Google that, there's a bunch of different things you can do with it. Now, the recipe my husband Joe used, you steamed the chopped up carrot tops first.
Oh, golly.
And then you went on to make your pesto. And this does have 3 cups carrot tops, 1 cup parsley, and then the rest of Parmesan cheese and nuts and garlic.
Okay, so your flavor is coming from the parsley and the
garlic.
And the garlic and the Parmesan, right?
But if your basil goes belly up, there's always the carrots. Also, this was given as a part of a recipe for using this carrot top pesto on some oven roasted carrots. So what could be bad about that? There you go, ha. Huh?
It's color, I guess. Uh-huh. I don't know. I always tease Joe that he cooks like an engineer.
Oh, he does.
So he's like calculating this and that. And me, given that you have chickens, I would just cut the carrot tops off and give them to the chickens, because then the chickens will eat them and turn it into something that I do like to eat.
See, there
eggs,
you go.
Right?
There you go. Right. There you go. But actually, what was kind of fun is Joe made this carrot top pesto, and we took it to a potluck, and it was worth
It
was a conversation starter, and it was good. I was surprised at it. I was expecting it to be kind of bitter, but it wasn't. Maybe the steaming it a little bit helped. But anyway.
Well, I think also, it's new carrot season too. So
that's
the
right.
Carrots are not, they're just freshly sprung, and they're not going to have a lot of bitterness to them. So
No, it's good.
You guys keep the tops. I'll eat the carrots, okay?
All right, we'll eat both. But yeah. But again, these were carrots that were just harvested, and so the carrot tops were good. Don't kind of buy some grayish-looking dead thing.
No, nothing too floppy.
But this time of year especially, there's a lot of good things to eat. Don't be afraid of trying new things, even if your opinion is that you'd rather give it to the chicken.
Well, if I'm going to eat the tops of something, I would probably go for beet tops.
Ah, I love
beets. They are, a lot of people won't eat them. They're strong.
Oh, I love beets.
And they're really, it's like, think of super strong spinach or something, yeah. You know? They're really, they have a lot of flavor and they have super amount of nutrition and they're a good texture. You know, the beet leaves are bigger, whereas the carrot tops are a little fluffier and not too much structure to them.
But yeah, there you go. But
okay, I'll eat the beet tops. Okay?
All right, good. Okay. There is, you can, if you're interested in carrot tops, you can Google that. And yes, it does work. It may not please everybody, but yes, it does work. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Support this fine radio station and find out more at www.khoifm.org. Donna Lana Kitchen. We're giving our thoughts and opinions and recipes on some good summer food. And now I guess we're going to take a segue here to something completely different. I'm going to do a little reading here from a book called The Food of a Younger Land by Mark Kurlansky. Can you actually believe there was a time in this country at the beginning of the last century when a handful of nickels could actually buy you a good meal, and people were just being amazed by the new industrial things that were happening as far as food was concerned, and people really kind of got into this. I'm going to read something about the automat. The automat, a place we could go and put nickels in.
Oh, yeah, this is the Horn and Hardart in New York City.
Yes.
Now, the first fast food restaurant, I would call it.
Yeah, it was. It was. See, somebody sat down and thought this whole thing up. And this is from a collection of writings put together by Mark Kurlansky. It is a collection of writings that were gathered during the Great Depression. It was part of a project called America Eats as part of a It's part of the Works Progress Administration. It was gathering stories about
for writers,
food,
giving
from
work
all
to
kinds
writers.
Of people, all kinds of people gathering stories about food. And this is by an author called Edward O'Brien, and he wrote about the automat. And yes, as Donna said, Horn and Hardart were the inventors or the marketers of this. And yes, they started in New York, but actually there were a few around the different country. It was opened originally in 1912 in New York City. The Automat. A sight to the out-of-towner and an honored institution among the city's millions is the mechanical lunchroom known as the Automat. This type of self-service eating place is the result of deep probing into the needs of the five-minute metropolitan center. Here, the man in a hurry is worried by no one, and he selects, pays, conveys, eats, and departs, leaving no tip, uttering no sound. 250,000 New Yorkers go through these silent processes daily in favorite automats. Some are regular customers. No New York wife knows her husband until she is studying him in an automat. A stranger entering these precincts is led by the crowd toward a trim marble counter in which are several plate-like depressions. A nickel is the unit of purchase, so coins and bills are exchanged for nickels. And with a fistful of nickels and wearing a hat, coat, carrying a briefcase or a handbag, the crowd moves toward the walls of food, assembled as they go to trays and silver and napkins. Dozens of illuminated metal cubicles separated from the hungry by little plate glass doors exhibit a single servings of something edible. Prices in nickels are posted beside the glass door. Chicken pie, 4 nickels. Hot mince pie, 2 nickels. The trick is to push the required number of nickels in the right slot and whisk out the food before the door slams shut again. As there are no discernible vacant places at the tables during rush hours, the title of tray jockey is bestowed on those skilled regulars who, through long practice in a broken field running, have become adept at the business of seat snatching. The automat diners return daily to their trials is not due to the love of punishment, but to the fact that food is hard to beat. The hot beef or chicken pies, baked in individual dishes, covered with brown and flaky crusts, are among the culinary wonders of New York, produced as they are in perfect and uniform thousands. The piping hot corned beef hash, made of honest lean beef and never too sharply flavored, is as good as a man's mother can cook. Clam chowder, English beef soup, little pots of slow-baked beans garnished with strips of crisp pork, rival Boston's, and the door of their cells rattle like a machine gun all day long. Thousands breakfast on the beloved cinnamon bun, but modestly named confection stuffed with raisins and covered with treacle. Treacle. That's a word we don't use very much anymore.
That's pretty English.
This, with a cup of excellent rich cream coffee, inspires many a wan New Yorker to start the day with a glow. Quality never varies. This accounts for the loyalty of the regulars. Such achievement in mass production cookery is credited in part to organization, in part to staff of the mostly highly paid chefs in the business. New York eats at the Automat. It does not, however, smoke or converse there. Smoking is, in fact, strictly forbidden by signed unspoken warnings, but no one minds. The automatic will flourish as long as the average New Yorker retains what he is, a person who is everlastingly fond of dropping coins into the slot, who loves good coffee, and who knows a good cinnamon bun. The last automat was closed, believe it or not, in 1991, although they kind of went downhill really quickly in the 50s. Horn and Hardot, the organization that had started this whole thing, believe it or not, stayed in the food business and sort of morphed into the Burger King Corporation.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the precursor of all of our fast food businesses.
Right.
And of course, Horn and Hardart probably, you know, their competition surpassed them maybe in the 60s or 70s, you know. But that was the first one.
But what an idea. People could go in and have something brand new. I don't know if I certainly was never to New York. I can't remember if I ever experience something like that or not.
Well, even when I moved to New York in the late 60s, it wasn't there anymore. This is a generation before even Lorna and I.
But it was getting people used to
automated food.
Fast foods.
Yep.
And you didn't see the people behind the
wall. And the uniformity of the food that, you know, you got the same thing every time and it looked the same. It came on a plate. I'm into antiquing. Every once in a while, I'll see some old restaurant plates and things, and they'll say, this is the original Horn and Hardart pattern. So the plates were all the same, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, now I wouldn't. That's the first time I've run across this name, Horn and Hardart. Very good. Oh, good. So,
history.
We have come a long way for good or for bad. The start of fast food. And fast food on a stick at the Iowa State Fair. Oh, my goodness. We all kind of like to stand in line and get something that is the same as the person before us got. So good. Good. We talked about the State Fair and summer bounty today. That's good. I want to mention, I got a notice from our local Story County Conservation Board has a little magazine they put out, and they have events coming up. And believe it or not, there's something called National S'mores Day. S'mores, S' Moore's Day. And to celebrate camping and campfire building and the skills of making s'mores. So National Campfire S'mores Day is Thursday, August 10th, and that will be celebrated at the Hickory Grove Park. And you can find out more information at storycountyconservation.org. I never really cared for s'mores, but I do like
them. No, I don't either.
Matt, very good. See, we have opinions. But I
right,
do.
I always burn my marshmallows, right?
I love burned marshmallows. I do like the marshmallows. I'm in there with my stick, and I enjoy baking my marshmallows and getting them gooey and having them catch on fire. That I enjoy. Smashing it between something else.
Graham crackers and Hershey bars.
Yes, right. Well, okay.
It's an awful lot of sweet on sweet. Yeah,
sweet on sweet, but. I do like a good burnt marshmallow. Ah, another taste of summer, or a taste of camping, anyway.
I bet there'll be s'mores and burnt marshmallows on Ragbri, too.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Lots of outdoor activities tonight here in Ames.
So. Yes, in Ames. Very good. Also coming, another seasonal sort of thing, is elderberries will be ripe soon, so...
Right, they're blooming in the woods right now.
Elderberries
they're very pretty.
Grow wild, so kind of eyeball those things. Bushes with white flowers, and the white flowers are changing to little green berries, which will change to little blackberries.
And then
real
the birds
soon.
Will eat. Them.
And the birds will eat them. Yes. So if you can grab them.
And the flowers. I love the flowers. Oh, the word gorgeous. Is called umbrals. One of my favorite words. So right now the umbrals are out in the woods.
Umbrals, yes. Elders. The elderflower, believe it or not, the elderberry bush actually has kind of a dark history. The elderflower, the wood from the elderflower was said to have been the wood that the cross of Christ was made from.
Oh, my.
How awful. Anyway... And also,
well, I guess they must grow in the Middle East then. I don't know.
Must be. And also, it says that Judas Iscariot hung himself from an elder tree. Now, they must have awful big trees over there because we have bushes here.
Yeah. Nothing that would sustain anything like that.
But
maybe this is some mythology or something.
It's a different thing. But it does...
Well, elderberries are really... The only reason to... Because I don't love the flavor of elderberries, but the reason to harvest them and preserve them is because they are full of antioxidants and they're considered a really good winter cold remedy.
Yeah.
So it has a really good medicinal value.
Very good. And it's kind of a base for a lot of other jams and jellies.
Yeah.
Elderflower. Look for them this time of year. I want to also... last Saturday, I was a judge at the kids' baking contest at the Ames Farmers Market. So, good job to everyone there. Yes, yes. Remember to catch us at the fair on August the 11th. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon, repeated at 7 p.m. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. You heard the tunes, Pierre Leone, Mason's Apron, and Devil's Dream. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had great engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.